listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Football in Europe, your weekly European football podcast. I am Rob Daly, your host, alongside me, co-host Chris Parrott. Chris, hello. Chris, what are we talking about this week on the show?
So much. Nice and Balotelli, can they win the first title since the 50s?
Nice story.
Gareth Bale is earning almost as much as we get from this podcast.
Sure.
Because he's got a new deal. At Real Madrid. What else are we talking about?
Higuain,
a rather disappointing Ruhr derby in Germany. And we've got Richard Connolly on the show, who is getting his house fixed.
He is indeed. More from that later. Richard Connolly, Eredivisie commentator on Sky Sports, talking Dutch football on Football in Europe this week. But first, Chris, it is our weekly feature. Rubens, this is where we give you a lovely piece of trivia or a stat or something.
We haven't made a sting for it yet, have we?
No, we do.
We could almost do, you know, the song the Kaiser Chiefs, Ruby, Ruby, Ruby. You could do
and just go
Ruben, Ruben,
just
Ruben.
Do it. All right, okay. Maybe I'll mop that up for next week.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. So, Chris, I really raised the bar in terms of Rubens last week, didn't I? Football trivia.
You sort of changed it from a Ruben to a.
It's sort of. I tell you what. Deep down, it's what I always wanted it to be. So, come on. What's your Ruben for the
week? No, let's go yours first.
Okay.
Because you've got a look on your face that suggests that you've done some more research.
It's a good one. So people might know this already.
You need to get a job, mate. Instead of doing this.
Bloody work. You should have seen how much work I did this weekend. And if you did hear me on the Daddy Kelly Transfer of Express, download that now from iTunes. Chris, Barcelona go to Manchester City this week, but do you know why Barcelona have the St. George's Cross in their badge, in the Barcelona badge?
No. Pray tell.
Okay, so in the coat of arms for the city of Barcelona lies two St. George's crosses. And the sort of Catalonia, you know, the yellow and red striped flag, right?
Yeah.
So Barcelona, until 1910, had that as their badge. And then they changed it to what we have now is the Barcelona badge. It's sort of bowl shape with the Blaugrana colours and then the England flag top left and then the Catalonia one. So I was thinking, why is that? So I've done some bloody good research into this. So basically, St. George is also the patron saint of Catalonia, much like England, even though he was something like it. The story goes back to a Greek soldier in the Roman army. But St. George is the patron saint for a load of places, including why Milan have got it in their badge as well. Now, how about this? So that's why it's in the badge. What is Catalan for St. George? Tricky question. Jordi Alba, a popular Catalan name. And which famous disciple, well, not disciple of Barcelona, but of Ajax, who went to Barcelona, named their son Jordi...
Cruyff.
Mic drop. That's why the England flag is in there.
So what you're saying, essentially, is that English football is basically behind Barcelona.
Well,
so
a lot of these clubs were set up, obviously, by Englishmen. A lot of major clubs in Europe. But this is to do with more why St. George's... I don't know why St. George's is the patron saint of so many places. So it's in the Genoa flag as well.
Are you saying that the FA is essentially behind total football?
I think
English football invented
Gareth
total
Southgate
football.
Is the next Spain head coach. Okay, so that's my one for this week. Chris, you're a stat guy, so let's have... I'm guessing.
This week I have gone stats as well. It is... A Italian journalist gave me this called Tancredi Palmieri, and I quite liked it. Before this weekend, after 10 games in Serie A, for the first time, two sides hadn't won a game. Bit more complicated, because you look at the table and you say, well, that's not true. It was Crotone, and it was Pescara. Pescara had a win in the win column, but only because they lost to Sassuolo. But Sassuolo fielded an ineligible player in August, so Pescara were given a 3-0 victory.
But Crotone got their first win.
This weekend. But before this weekend, for the first time ever in Serie A, two teams after 10 games had not won
a football match.
Football match.
Nice. Good work, Chris. That's good.
Thanks, Tancredi.
Can we get him on the show?
Yes.
One day? Great.
Yeah. He's very Italian. He is very Italian.
Don't forget to keep your tweets coming in at FIE Podcast. We'll read out some of your messages later on. And, God's sake, if you like this podcast, leave us a review on iTunes, yeah, Chris?
Yeah. Stop swearing, otherwise people will...
Sorry.
They'll get upset.
Sorry, so don't be a layabout. Leave us a review on iTunes. Another new feature, Chris, before we talk about German football. We don't... Well, the Ballon d'Or, I like the idea of the Ballon d'Or, yeah?
Mm.
Traditional award. Respect for it. Best player in the world.
And you need to... You celebrate success and great footballers.
But what's our problem with it?
I just...
That's all the build-up, isn't it?
It's all the build-up. It's all the talk. It's a 40 isn't a short list. That's a long list. And it's also just how it's voted just seems on popularity. I'm just not.
Okay. Well, how about this for a feature? How about instead of talking about the Ballon d'Or every week, we just play a weird sound?
Yeah. The funny thing is we've actually talked about the Ballon d'Or.
That's annoying. But we'll say this is the part that... So going forward, it'll be this is the part of the show where we don't talk about the Ballon d'Or. Here's, and this week, it's Roma head coach Luciano Spalletti banging his head against a table.
Okay, cominciamo bene.
He must have a headache this morning.
Oh, that's a thud, isn't it?
That's a real
thud. Some real purchase on that, puppy. Yeah.
Imagine you in that press conference.
Yeah, so they just won 4-1 and someone asked him a question about why did you concede or something like that. And he just, in the middle of the press conference, started smashing his head against the table.
Great response, in fairness.
It is. So every week you get to pick the sound effect that we'll use instead of talking about the Ballon d'Or, yeah?
Yep.
Chris, time to talk about German football.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
Indeed. So, the big derby in German football. I know that the marketing men would probably like it to be Der Klassiker and Dortmund against Bayern, but we all know it is the Ruhr derby. Schalke Dortmund. And after all the hype and the build-up, it was a little flat.
Yeah, it was. I mean, if we think back to last season, Dortmund-Bayern was really build up in the latter stages of last season. As you know, is this the game Dortmund get back in the title race? Finish 0-0, and the Revere derby finished 0-0 at the weekend as well. I mean, Thomas Tuchel has been fairly open about his disappointment at the way his team aren't taking chances. Dortmund injury ravaged at the moment. Something like 10 first-teamers out. Marco Reus hasn't even had a kick yet this season, but he is back in training. And it turns out the transition, I think, for Dortmund, Chris, is turning out to be a little trickier than they thought. It looked really good at the start of the season, even though they sold Hummels, Mkhitaryan and Gundogan, and they brought in some of the best young talent in Europe. But tricky. Four without a win. And, you know, they kept a clean sheet against Schalke, who had a very good first half, but they're not the finished article yet,
and they look like they might have a... Do you think they? I mean, they'll get top four, I'm sure. But there's three teams unbeaten now. One of them's Bayern. Two of them are far less likely than that. But Dortmund are going to have to start winning games fairly soon if they want to get second.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, you know, and some careless games that they've dropped points in. I mean, I think to the 3-3 draw with Ingolstadt again, they almost lost. You know, that they haven't. I saw them win 5-1 at Wolfsburg, and they were absolutely sensational at the day. But Wolfsburg, it turns out, are a bit of a disaster. But you look down the table, in like 9th, 10th, 11th, it's Gladbach, Leverkusen, Schalke have worked their way up the table after losing their first five. Then Wolfsburg are 16th. Mm. They're the teams that should be at the other end. Germany, sort of a bit, Bayern aside, is a bit upside down at the moment.
Yeah, which I think we discussed this last week, didn't we? And it's great. But as long as they can keep that consistency at the top, otherwise Bayern will just run away with it.
Well, this is a problem. But we do have two interesting Bayern hunters we talked about last week, Bayern chasers.
I know it sounds very English, but every time you hear of Bayern Jaeger, you think of some awful drink you had when at university, don't you?
Yes, yes. You can't get rid of the taste.
Yeah, yeah.
And Bayern can't get rid of Leipzig and Hoffenheim at the Singstar. So Leipzig won 2-0 at Darmstadt. Leipzig promoted from Bundesliga 2 last year. And Hoffenheim, under their 29-year-old head coach, who we talk about a lot, Julian Nagelsmann, they won again. They beat Hertha to go above them in the table. So suddenly we have these two very unpopular teams, yeah, because they're the sort of exactly what German football's against, in German football fan culture's against in Germany. And they're second and third to... The team maybe hated most next in Bayern.
Yeah.
I mean, the top three are not very light.
I know. But it's going to be quite funny. Just say this goes on until the winter break comes in at the end of December. You're going to get to a stage where actually people are going to be, I really want a title race. So yeah. I might have to, you know, hope Leipzig don't win it. But, you know, it's going to be fascinating.
That's funny. A friend of the show, Archie Rintutt, tweeted out, he said, what would you rather, to German football, would you rather Bayern won the league or Leipzig won the league?
Yeah.
And I think he had hundreds of people vote on it, and it was, the majority would much rather have Leipzig win it.
I thought the answer would be Bayern.
I know, but Bayern, I suppose it's like United in the yeah. late 90s, early noughties kind of thing.
Just, I mean, for those that don't like Leipzig, if they were to win the Bundesliga ever, that elevates them to a totally...
Oh, my God.
That means they are certainly here to stay. I mean, they already are, but, you know, if they won the league...
And remember, if you don't follow German football, Ralf Hasenhüttl, the head coach of Leipzig, who was at Ingolstadt last year, he's going to get linked with jobs in England in the next year, like a Jurgen Klopp-type personality, so good tactically. So remember where you heard his name first.
Well, and just to quickly come back to, you know, Julian Nagelsmann, who's 29... Is he going to stay at Hoffenheim for the whole of this season?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I think he's going to stay there a while, actually, and cut his teeth.
But what about if someone like, I don't know, Wolfsburg or Schalke or, you know, I'm not saying they will get rid of their managers, but...
No, I don't think... I think also other clubs might be a little wary. He's still only 29 and he is sort of 9 months into this job. I mean, do we really know who... he's out doing a great job. They were almost relegated last year. He saved them. But I think clubs would be slightly cautious, but there may be a managerial change on the way, Chris, because Roger Schmidt is in real trouble as Leverkusen head coach.
Is he?
He is, and particularly after losing to a third-tier team in the German Cup, a game he had to watch from the team bus because of suspension, so he had to watch it on an iPad. And get this, as he tried to get into the stadium for the Wolfsburg game, well ahead of kickoff to like look at the pitch and all that. And stewards, there's footage of this, formed like a wall in front of him, like a defensive, and stopped him getting into the ground. So Schmidt had to go, okay, it's a humiliating little piece of footage.
Yeah, it is. I mean, he'll be wandering on the turf at Wembley this week against Tottenham.
Very true.
Massive game for Spurs, but also for Leverkusen. I read an interview with Javier Hernandez saying how much he's loving life at Leverkusen. Last played at Wembley in the Champions League final. So that's the type of player they have up front, which I guess makes when you're mid-table and you've been dumped out of the German Cup even worse when you have the squad he has at his disposal.
Yeah, they were expected to do very well this season. A final one on this, a Bayern one at the weekend. They beat Augsburg 3-1 in a Bavarian derby, but Anthony Modeste, Blackburn icon, he had a 5-game loan without scoring.
Icon.
He's now...
Is that the same as Nikola Kalinic? He's also banging
Yeah. A good comparison, actually. And Modeste is now on 11 goals for the season, outscoring Aubameyang and Lewandowski. He got a hat-trick against Hamburg. He looks great. And actually, clubs in China wanted him in the summer. So Cologne said, OK, we'll give you €2.5 million a year, which is a lot of money for them. And that has really paid off. And Joachim Löw has reportedly agreed a new contract to 2020.
Is he ever... Is he just going to be Germany manager forever?
Well, if he sees it out till 2020, he'll be the second joint longest-serving German national team coach, along with Helmut Schön in 64 to 78, as it would be a 14-year spell. 2006, he took over from Klinsmann. He said he wouldn't go back to the Bundesliga as a coach. He says, abroad, that interests me when the time comes to become a club coach again.
So he's going to potentially go through the next two World Cups?
World Cup.
Oh, no.
No. Euro and another World Cup and another Euro.
Okay, so he's dipping out of Qatar 2022.
Potentially, yeah.
Probably
unless
a good
he
idea.
Just keeps
going.
I mean, he's 56 now. In my head, he's just always been like 46.
I know.
Okay, Chris, let's talk about Gareth Bale. My word, he is earning coin.
Can
you tell us about his new contract?
Well, reportedly the best player in the world now.
Some people saying that, yeah.
Which is it's so hard to know, actually, after, you know, tax and everything like that. And
sponsor, all that.
All that. And how much are people actually earning in China? Because some of the reported fees for Hulk after he left Zenit are astronomical.
Gretchen Opella is the eighth best paid player in the world.
In the world, yeah, quite. Apparently, €350 or pounds, as it's basically the same now, after tax a week into Gareth's bank account. It's impossible to, in a way, that is probably the market rate for Gareth Bale. If you're Real Madrid, they have this transfer ban. They cannot afford to let him go to a, you know, they're realistically going to have to, well, I think they are going to build a team around him when Ronaldo eventually does trot
off.
Think
a lot of people are saying that? Do you think that's the plan?
Yeah, I think
this is the whole
I'm sure. And
he's not
going
to United, is he, or anything?
No. And why would he leave? And why would Real Madrid want him to leave? I know some fans think that he doesn't do enough, but he, you know, he has been a huge success since he's gone there. He's not that old. He has experience of carrying. I'm sure Real Madrid look at how he's carried that Wales team as the leader, as the main man, hugely impressively. Semi-finals of a major European, major world championship. So he's done it, and he has experience of it. And he's on a nice new 6-year deal. No, sorry, he signed a 6-year deal in 2013, and he's.
But I think this one also goes up to 2022 or something like that. So I think that's another new six-year deal.
And of course, Ronaldo is still yet to put pen to paper on his new deal, which I'm
that'll take him past Bale, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely. But still, not bad for Gareth Bale. But it is great to see someone move from the Premier League, a British player, and do as well as he's done, I think.
He's done wonderfully well. Modric, Vasquez and Cruz have all signed new deals this month for Real Madrid. Real Madrid won 4-1 at Alaves at the weekend. Ronaldo with a hat-trick.
First of the season.
For Ronnie. Marcelo said he has been angry with himself up until that point before he scored that hat-trick. Did you see his topless picture on Twitter?
Unbelievable.
Mate.
Just, I mean,
what is he up to, that guy?
No, but he's just having a joke at everybody's expense.
Is he?
Yeah, he's like, I can do whatever I want and people are going to... Yeah, and do you see Peter Crouch?
Oh, retweet and I'll recreate this.
Yeah, I'd love to see that.
He's got to do that now, though, Crouch, isn't he?
Well, he will do, I imagine.
Dear Lord.
Yeah, quite. But we shall see. But just finally, the transfer ban. I mean, you mentioned those players that have signed new deals. That's one of the reasons, because if you can't sign someone, you have to make sure you don't lose your best stars.
I suppose, in a way, if you're in a transfer ban and you don't have a guy locked down for a long time, their agent is in a good,
very
really
good.
Strong position to say, well,
absolutely,
his contract's running out, you can't sign anyone, give us more money.
Yeah, or
he'll
off.
Go.
And I think, sadly, clubs now know that they will go.
Well, a bit of player power.
Well, a bit of agent power, talking to the player, but it must be very frustrating, I'm sure.
What else, Chris? This Barcelona-Valencia situation. I'm amazed this has dragged on this week, because that bottle-throwing incident was bad, shouldn't have happened, but I thought that would die down after a couple of days. It has rumbled on all week to a full-on protest at Barcelona, because the president, Javier Tebas, hasn't been too clever with his sentiment.
La Liga president, yeah. He
what did I say?
No, I wasn't sure.
Oh, sorry.
We like to have clarity on
podcast. Go on.
I said, in a way, he sort of agreed with me. Maybe he listened to this podcast, Rob. But it was an incident that shouldn't have happened. Someone threw a bottle. Fans shouldn't do that. Barcelona players did go and celebrate right in front of the Valencia section.
That's where the penalty was.
I know, but it's wrong to throw a bottle there. It's absolutely no defence of that.
Yeah.
However, if you do that, you do give fans an option to do that. So it probably wasn't the most clever thing on all sides. However, the La Liga president...
they were far more blaming.
It's far more blamey of Barcelona. And I get the picture that there's always this sense that they are pro-Madrid, and you know what it's like in Spain anyway. So they all held up red cards to him. At the Nou Camp at the weekend.
They did, and they wonder whenever Granada. Interestingly, the footage was not shown on Spanish TV.
Was it not?
No surprise. Well, if it's La Liga's feed, you know, why would you... They're not going to show that.
Indeed.
Which is crazy. A highlight of the weekend from Simon Harrison, Las Palmas, and their comeback versus Celta Vigo. They were 3-0 down, and Kevin Prince-Boateng scored again in a brilliant 3-3 draw for Las Palmas. What a result for them.
Indeed. Sevilla have done so well this season, held at Sporting Gijón, and a hamstring injury potentially for Samir Nasri.
Shame, because he's been great. He has been great, and all his teammates have been saying how lovely he is.
Huge blow that would be if he's out for any length of time, in terms of, you know, they want to finish in the top four. More importantly, they do not want to go into the Europa League. And they're in a great position now, along with Juve, to go through. But Samir Nasri is massively important for them.
Yeah, he said recently, I've returned to play my best football. I feel, prior to the injury, I feel very well. I have the confidence of the coach. Last season, I was out for 6 months injured. I knew what I wanted was playing time, and I have it here. And Atletico won again, Chris. Carrasco with a couple.
And Gamero with a couple. Yannick Carrasco can't stop scoring. That bodes very well. Gamero, one of their summer signings. Carrasco, I think we saw last season, not always first choice, but he's a heck of a player.
He's so good.
Mm. And of course, after the international break, 19th of November, Atletico Real Madrid.
Oh.
Put that one in your diary.
What is that? Is that Saturday or something?
Saturday. It's a Saturday. It should be an absolute corker.
Okay. How about we talk about the Eredivisie, Chris?
Yes.
For more, head to the website, footballineurope.co.uk.
Joining us on Football in Europe now is Eredivisie football commentator. You may hear him on Sky Sports as well, Richard Connolly. Richard, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
A pleasure, chaps. Hello.
Hello, Richard. Richard, someone is doing tiles at your house, you've informed us in advance.
Yes, there may be some banging and crushing. We weren't expecting him, but it's a good thing. He's going to mend our roof.
What? Hold on. Why aren't you doing your own tiles? Why are you getting someone else in?
Because I'm absolutely hopeless with my hands. I talk for a living.
Talk for a job.
Also, how come you weren't expecting him to arrive? Has he just turned up with tiles?
Yeah, this is now too long a story to be of interest.
Richard, it's not. You've not heard this podcast, mate, then, if you think this is bad content.
it's sort of the final stage of a long job, and it's just a little bit of filling in some gaps that needed doing.
Well,
we were relaxed about the return date.
Well, we're merely at the start of a long job in the Eredivisie season, surely, Richard, with Feyenoord
that
winning their opening nine games.
Link.
Chris, leave me alone. They won their opening nine games. Feyenoord have drawn their last two, including a weekend 2-2 draw with Heerenveen. But are they the best team from what you've seen in the opening weeks of the season, Richard, as they go in search of their first title in quite some time?
You know, I'm going to be a bit non-committal about this. Well, I'm not. I mean, I don't think there's anything really between the top three at all. I mean, the difference in point terms, Feyenoord have 29 points, Ajax 26 and PSV 24. I mean, the difference really is that Feyenoord beat PSV by 1-0 at PSV a little earlier in the season when they were a bit fortunate to do so. Feyenoord and Ajax drew in the Clásico last weekend. And Ajax threw in a bad result on week three when they lost at home to Willem II, and they shouldn't have done, with a new coach bedding in. So really, the difference is one mistake by Ajax and one result that Feyenoord got in Eindhoven. I mean, I don't think that the gap between the teams has been at all established at this point, and I think it's too early to say. I would still look at PSV and say the quality in their team, as evidenced by the runs in Europe over the last couple of years and a couple of titles, would suggest to me that they're still the likeliest team to win the league, or the league table. A glance at that would tell you perhaps otherwise.
What's happened there, though? A young team, certainly in the Champions League as well, they've only got one point, albeit in a group with Bayern and Atletico. Why have they struggled perhaps a little bit, albeit I think they've won their last two games in a row now?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is the Champions League draw. I mean, this is a team that had done really well to break out of the group stage and get into the round of 16, something that Dutch teams have really struggled to do for a decade or more. And they were sort of leading the way and I guess were aspiring to even better this season. And from the moment the draw came out, they knew they basically had close to zero chance of doing that. I think that must have been massively demotivating. It's a horrendous Champions League draw for them, and I'm sure they're aiming to get into the Europa League and do something in that competition, as Feyenoord and Ajax are too. But I think that has had a demotivating factor. The one key thing, it jumps out at you off the page, PSV have played five matches at home in the Eredivisie we're talking about now, not the Champions League. Five league matches at home, and they've scored only three goals in those matches. I mean, it's an extraordinary anomaly, frankly. Feyenoord have scored 17 goals in their six home games, and you expect that number to be vastly, vastly superior. It's the same group of players. Evidently, they're creating vast swathes of chances. The stats suggest they're taking plenty of shots on goal. I mean, nothing looks out of place apart from that one number. They're just missing huge numbers of chances.
Yeah, very odd. Very odd indeed. And I'm just going through Ajax's results, actually. They're scoring at home for fun at the moment, really. And but you commentated on their game against Excelsior, and a 1-0 win for Ajax. Because obviously they lost Milik, but they spent a bit of that money on the guy who got the winner on the day. Can you tell us a bit more about him and how he's settling in for Ajax, their new star?
Yeah, well, this is Hakim Ziyech, who essentially kept Twente in the Eredivisie on his own last season with a phenomenal number of goals and assists in a dreadful team that was afflicted by financial problems off the field, threatened with relegation. They were officially relegated and then reinstated during the off-season. It was all a bit of administrative chaos. So Twente are still in the Eredivisie. He was there for the first few games of the season and then signed for Ajax for, what, 11, 12 million euros right at the end of the August transfer window. And many of us were expecting Ziyech to get a move to a league of a higher standard. But Ajax stepped in and signed him, and they haven't lost a game with him there. So I think we can say he's settled in. He's been assisting goals. He scored a super goal, as you might have seen, against Excelsior. Took it down the chest, forwarded it in right into the corner from 25 yards or so. He is their most creative influence instantly. And he's a hugely, hugely gifted player. Sees a pass before other players do. And he's going to have a terrific, terrific career beyond Ajax. But whether he can lift them to actually winning the title back this season is the big question, really. He's you know, one of the best players in the league, if not the best.
Of course, Ajax lost their coach, Frank de Boer, in the summer. He's now under immense pressure at Inter, and who knows, by the end of today, could be sacked even. We're recording this on Monday morning. You've seen more of him than most in terms of his coaching ability. Is he a good coach?
Yeah, I mean, I've not been out on the training ground with him. but, I mean, I think it's... The thing about Ajax and Frank de Boer was that he was coming with an idea to restore an identity, to go back to the olden days of pass and pressure and all that kind of thing. And with his link to Barcelona, it felt like a fit. It was a cultural thing. And he came in and he won the title immediately, and they won four titles in a row. But when he left, I mean, it was a tremendously low ebb. They'd lost the title to PSV twice consecutively. And there'd been a real question about a lack of flexibility in his coaching and an ability, when it came to the higher standard of matches in the European games, to actually sacrifice a few of those principles by necessity against teams that were better. He didn't seem to want to do that. Does that mean he's suited to a bigger club, a better club, working with better players where he would refuse to compromise and it would still work? I don't know. I think it was an odd one, really. I mean, his reputation had really soared in the early years at Ajax, but was really dipping when he got a significant step up in standard. And I think he may struggle to recover the sort of shine on his reputation he initially had. I mean, there were more questions than answers when he left Ajax, frankly.
It's really interesting you say that about identity and how important that is in terms of a managerial appointment, because I was speaking to someone recently about the fact that Frank de Boer took over Inter, and AC Milan said that they did look at de Boer. And AC Milan have far more of a Dutch identity than Inter do. Inter don't really have any, but you think back to Hullet and Rijkaard, Van Basten, all that stuff. AC Milan do, and I suppose that could be a factor, couldn't it, Richard, that Inter don't have that identity, and it's odd to think that it can have such an impact in a managerial role.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does have an impact, because it gets you off to a start. I mean, it's like when Pep Guardiola took over at Barcelona, frankly. I mean, everybody knew who he was, but nobody really understood what he was going to be about as a coach. Mm. And you thought, well, if he doesn't make a good start at Barcelona, and I remember asking this question myself when it happened, when he took over, remarkable though it sounds, you know, is he going to get a bit more time to settle in because of his identity, because of his links with the club, because people there know him and like him? And the feeling was that maybe he would. And you come in from the outside into a club like Inter when, you know, you don't have a real link with the place. You don't have something about your football background which suggests that you're going to hit it off with the fan, understanding of, you know, the core of a club. And you don't get that. You don't get that time. So when things go wrong at the start, you're vulnerable immediately.
Yeah, fascinating. Coming back to the current crop in the Eredivisie, A lot of players from big English clubs have gone there on loan. Lewis Baker's there again at Vitesse. Has anyone particularly impressed you this season?
Baker's done okay, and I think the Vitesse fans like him because he's energetic and he seems to believe in the cause, and he really does put everything out there, and he's skillful too. He scores from free kicks, as we know, and he's got 5 goals already in the season. So he's one that's done well. The real standout club, though, when it comes to loans, is FC Twente again. And they lost Ziyech, and one assumed that with the loss of him, they might go right down the plug hole because they were so dependent on him last season. And with the finances as they were, they had nothing really to work with. However, they have brought in 3 players from Manchester City, and all 3 have been an immediate success. Enes Unal has scored 7 times, and only Nikolai Jorgensen of Feyenoord, and he's another reason that Feyenoord have done well this season because they've got a significant upgrade at number 9. But Enes Unal has 7 goals to Jorgensen's 8. Bertrand Celina has 4 goals, and Yor Yeboah 2 goals. That's 13 out of Twente's 20 goals have been scored by their 3 loanees from Manchester City, and they're 2 19-year-olds and a 20-year-old.
But I suppose, I suppose that the question we also wanted to ask is about, is that damaging? You know, the Eredivisie is seen as this league that cultivates its own talent and has to because of the high turnover of very technically gifted players. Is this, you know, seeing English players going over there and cultivating that game? Do you think this, you talked about the high percentage of goals that it makes up for Twente, is this damaging for the Dutch game in any way, do you think?
Well,
I know it's a big question, but it's a trend we're seeing a lot more of English guys or English-based players going over there.
I think maybe the Dutch fans would be more worried about it if there wasn't such a key production line of Dutch talent coming through at better clubs than Twente. I mean, we're talking about the 3 big clubs in the league, Feyenoord, Ajax and PSV, still have a big core of Dutch players. And certainly in Ajax's case, and to a lesser degree in the other 2's case, but still, there are young players coming through there making a big difference who are right at the heart of the action week in, week out. And those young players are getting recognised with international selection. So the same questions probably aren't asked in the same way about Dutch football as a whole as they are in England because of that success. But still, I mean, if you're a club like Vitesse and you know, you're getting a quantity of loanees from Chelsea all the time, maybe even at Twente this season, although frankly they know that Twente, that these young players are helping them into a position that they would never be without them. So there has to be gratitude too. But yeah, you do get used to seeing players coming in simply to further their own careers and who have not been a part of the club culture growing up, and you probably don't enjoy the success in the same way. Mm. Is it damaging? Frankly, I think in a lot of cases it's helping increase the standard. If the clubs in the middle sector of the Eredivisie get a bit of a lift in quality from loanees, I would suggest that's probably a good thing for the league.
Richard, great to get you on. Thank you so much for taking the time to help us out on the podcast. And you should go make Martin a cup of tea for doing the times. Yeah?
I need to go. Do you know what? He's gone.
What? He's gone.
I didn't even speak to him. He turned up. He wasn't expected. Now he's gone.
He didn't fall off the roof, did he? He's okay.
No. Well, his van's gone from outside. So either he's still up on the roof doing the tiles, and somebody's taken his van, or he's gone. So there you go. In the time it took to feature on the European Football Podcast, my roof's been retiled.
Incredible.
Well done, Martin.
And well done, Richard. Great contribution. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
This is Football in Europe.
Richard Connolly. What a guy, Chris.
Yeah, knows his Dutch stuff.
He certainly does. And do you know your stuff? Because it's time to ask you this week's trivia teaser from @BigFootyTeaser, who does a Football in Europe special every week. Chris, the question from Big Footy Teasers is this, while I get it up on Twitter.
I was wondering why you were doing that.
While I was floundering.
Thing where you just speak a little slower to fill time and talk around the subject, and here we are.
As a player, I won the Champions League with both the finalists of the 1995 competition, and I later won the Champions League as a manager. Who am I?
I think I know, and I think we have mentioned him on this very show.
Ooh, clue. As a player, I won the Champions League with both the finalists of the 1995 final. I later won the Champions League as a manager. Who am I? We will reveal the answer at the end of the podcast. Chris, before we do that, Let's round up some of the big stories in the week. Gonzalo Higuain faced his former club Napoli for the first time since his 90 million euro move to Juventus.
And guess what happened?
Banged in the winner.
He did.
He did.
Didn't really celebrate, did he? Didn't really do an awful lot in the game, but that's why you pay the money, because if you give him a chance, he scores a goal. Big win for Juve against one of their main title rivals. Gigi Buffon, again, this morning speaking about Europe. I know it's a European week coming up, but they have Lyon at home. But just talking again that he is so desperate to win the Champions League.
Yeah.
And that, you know, basically from the start of the season, I don't know if it's been a club policy or whether, you know, they just all believe it looking around the dressing room, but they really, really consider themselves as contenders.
Yeah, and rightly so. I mean, Marchisio is coming back as well.
Yeah.
Some great stuff ahead of that game. Maurizio Sarri, the Napoli head coach, said he was going to greet a Higuain like an angry, disappointed father. And they did have a nice hug, actually, ahead of the game. And Bonucci said ahead of the game, if he scores, he should celebrate, and he didn't. But it's a big blow for Napoli, who are without Milik at the moment. Higuain back at in Naples, what's going to happen?
Well,
going to go mad, aren't
they? They're going to go. I don't think it will be a warm reception, let's just say.
Traitor is the word that was sort of.
Yeah. Well, and I think the owner,
Aurelio De Laurentiis,
who's never short of a comment or two, said he had let down the whole of Naples by leaving. Do you know, at home, last week there was a midweek round of games in Serie A.
Yeah.
Napoli only attracted 15,000 to Stadio San Paolo.
For a league game?
Hmm. Pretty really? Short, yeah, exactly.
What is that about?
Well, quite. I mean, there'll be 60-odd thousand when Juve come to town, and it'll be a wonderful atmosphere. But, I think Sarri, for the first time over the last month or so, is having his first difficult spell. They lost to Besiktas in the Champions League as well.
Yeah,
they
that
should
was
go through
bad.
Massive game in Istanbul, actually, this week. If they were to lose there, all of a sudden that group is... He's going down to the wire. He's lost Milik, which is a massive blow, having lost Higuain.
Do you know they've been linked with this week as well? Guangzhou Evergrande wrapped up the Chinese title at the weekend.
Yeah.
Jackson Martinez has barely had a kick.
I did
so
hear
his
that.
Agent, Martinez's agent's been talking about the possibility of maybe a loan or something to Napoli. How Napoli would be the kind of club he'd be up for playing for.
Yep, I was on the Sirius with the boys from Sirius the other day, and they said that in America there were reports of Didier Drogba.
Yeah, that's another one.
Didn't want to come on or something for Montreal in the last weeks of the season.
Yeah,
and then people put two and two together and said he doesn't want to avoid injury. And I hadn't heard that link, but that type of short term deal to plug the gap for Milik would make total sense.
Yeah, Milik, the Higuain replacement.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about Higuain when he does go back to Naples. And you know when players go and they face their former club and it's like crazy.
Mm.
Do you not, and it sounds bad because it's a big game, say, oh, Higuain's just got a cold.
No.
Higuain's injured.
No, and Higuain himself would be like, I know, I'm going to go and score.
But not every player would be like that, would they? Some would crumble, wouldn't they?
No,
the idea.
They should be like that. They definitely shouldn't pull players out for that. It's great. As long as it doesn't go over the top, that's what football's all about. It's the atmosphere will be unbelievable.
But I think when Valbuena went back to Marseille with Lyon last year and they hung that effigy.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, fans will always do that. But did it make for a more interesting game? Probably.
Oh, no.
I mean, it was horrible.
I know, I agree with you in terms of the story and everything, great. I'm talking about if you're the manager and you want to get the best result possible.
You play your best player.
But do you take away the focus from, does it distract? Does it just become a big bad thing? And does that if the player performs badly?
Could do. I think if you manage it well, you know, maybe it takes the... You could do it. It takes the pressure off the other 10 players who are playing. It's all about Higuain, and you have to trust if you spend that much money you get to know the individual very well. And if you do think he'll crumble, then okay, maybe you do take him out the firing line. But if it's Gonzalo Higuain, you start him up front and
he'll score the winner. And he'll like he did.
He'll score the winner, yeah.
Hey, we talked about Depur with Richard, and the pressure increases on him because of a 1-0 loss to Sampdoria. I mean, this is looking bad for De Boer.
Fourth defeat in five games. They won in midweek.
I'll tell you what, they were lucky to beat Southampton.
They were
were bad that day.
They were also lucky to beat Torino. Joe Hart dropped a bit of a clanger last midweek.
Yeah, he did.
But yeah, they were beaten by Samp. Fabio Quagliarella, who seems to have been around forever, scored the only goal.
Played for everyone.
Once signed him on Champ Man in about 2001, I think.
Wow.
He was sparkling for me. But anyway, that's fantasy and this is real. But Edir came off, looked to snub the handshake of De Boer. It's not a happy camp at the moment.
I'm not sure if he's on loan from Sampdoria, and Icardi used to play for them, so presumably he would have been very disappointed to go off without.
There's no Gabby Goal, who they spent a lot of money. They bought João Mário. They've got a good squad.
You were excited by their squad at the start of the season.
I tipped them for top four, top three. So I just thought that they do have the squad. And again, we talked about Leverkusen. If you do have the squad, it just compounds the fact that you're doing as badly as they are. And De Boer is doing badly. Inter are doing badly. And I'd be surprised if it carries on much longer.
Me too. From Italian football to an Italian international in Mario Balotelli.
Yes. Oh, one quick thing. Serie B. Don't know if you saw this.
Oh, yeah. Go.
Bari were at home to Pro Vercelli, who brought one supporter. Good lad. And he got a beer. He got a beer from the Bari fans.
That's great. Did you remember that Udinese fan a few years ago did that? And then Udinese, he was the only one who went to an away game. Might have been at Sampdoria. That's a top flight team,
I know.
And then he was like a guest of honour at the next game, and he captured the hearts of the Italian nation.
It's great. You know, you can drink in view of the pitch in Italy, apparently. According to this, unless you got handed a non-alcoholic beer, which would be an awful
alcohol-free.
Oh, you give me an alcohol-free beer.
Nine.
I've travelled all the way to Bari, and you give me an alcohol-free beer.
Please give me a Peroni.
Yeah,
please.
Or an Aperol Spritz.
Or an Aperol Spritz.
Imagine he handed it back.
I don't drink that.
This is cocktail hour. It's Aperol Spritz or nothing.
We drink Aperol Spritz at Bari. But Balotelli, Chris, scored again, 6 in 5. Nice top. By Nice. 6 points.
6 points, because Monaco can only draw at St Etienne. That's a sizable advantage. Last champions in 1959. Last major title of the League Cup in 1997. They look good. Comfortable finish. He beat the offside flack. He did a nice bow to the Nice fans.
He's enjoying it when he scores now. Yeah. I mean, he used to be a grumpy old thing when he scored.
And Alassane Player, who's up front with Balotelli, has outscored him. He's only 23, got 7 for the season. So things...
they're replacing the goals of Ben Arthur then, I suppose, aren't they those two guys?
You know, they've recruited very well again. It's been unusual, but, you know, Claude Puel left as well. Lucien Favre has come in and has carried it on. And, you know, it would be great, even
you're
if...
You're skeptical, though, eh? You think PSG will come good?
I just think it's difficult not to be when PSG have won it. But the gap at the moment is enough that, you know, Nice don't need to win every game at the moment to still be top for, you know, maybe a couple more months. And then as soon as you get beyond Christmas, if you're top, then bang, there is a title race. And it would be great if Nice could carry it on.
Okay, just a couple of other things. Rudy Garcia drew his first home game as Marseille manager 0-0 with Bordeaux. Monaco drew 1-1 at Saint-Étienne. And PSG did win against Lille away from home on Friday night.
Yeah, and they go to Basel in the Champions League. They're doing okay.
Cavani, 13 goals in 10 games.
Yeah, which he's. I think there is still the worry that the big chances Ibrahimovic would always have scored them. Will Cavani?
Oh no, he
probably
he
not.
Misses loads too.
As you know, as we saw that in you know we heard from Mark Rodden last week, he had the chance to win it against Marseille and didn't. So they create so many chances. You'd probably expect your main goal scorer to be at least on that thus far.
Chris, in Russia, you were commentating on Russian football, but you weren't commentating on quite the game of the weekend.
No, Spartak CSKA, which
Moscow derby.
Moscow, the fiercest derby in Russian football. It's not the oldest. That's Spartak Dynamo, and Spartak Zenit is a big derby. But this is really the game.
That's funny because I was reading a comment from I'll mention this more in a moment, Spartak Ultra, saying that this has overtaken Spartak Dynamo as the one.
I think it was always probably second historically, but owing to the fact of where the two teams have finished recently in the leagues, it's become the biggest. And Spartak won. Massimo Carrera, who was part of Antonio Conte's coaching team of Italy, went there. You might remember Kerben Bedeev. Everybody thought he was going to go there after leaving Rostov. He's back at Rostov now, but that's a whole different podcast in itself. But they haven't won the league since 2001, Rob. And this is a team who won 9 of the first 10 Russian Premier League titles. You know, that's more dominant than Manchester United, more dominant than Liverpool in this country. And since the last of that run in 2001...
No titles. Badly run club previously,
Badly run club.
And their manager did quit after... Well, got essentially sacked after a few weeks of this season.
Yep. They lost to someone...
Lost in the Europa League player, Europa League qualifiers,
didn't they? Not like Larnaca. Somebody like that. It was someone...
Yeah, it was bad. Yeah. That lost Alanichev his job.
Yeah, and then Carrera has come in and seems a happy camp. And they are top alongside Zenit. And they're a long way ahead of... Siska now because of that win, so it looks like it might be becoming a two-horse race.
There was some trouble in the stands as well.
There was an awful lot of pyrotechnics, and then there was a bit of trouble.
They had to stop the game for 5 minutes, I think, at one point.
They had to stop the game not owing to the amount of smoke that there was around. Which
like almost purely logistically, like we need to stop
definitely,
because we can't see.
Logistically, you couldn't see one end to the end. What I would say is, and yes, this is a venue for the World Cup and it's been picked up in the British media. I don't think the trouble in the stands was anything worse than what happened at West Ham Chelsea, which was horrible. Both of these incidents were awful. But I think the game was mostly stopped due to the amount of smoke from firecrackers and flares, which is a part of Russian football fans' culture. That happens at most games in terms of letting them off.
Sure.
But yeah, you literally couldn't see the other end of the pitch.
Okay, well, that's why. Champions League and Europa League this week, Chris, but it's time to give the answer to our trivia teaser. That's our final bit of business.
Yes, it is. Actually, I was just going to quickly mention Rostov was my game. They played a B team and they lost, and they are awful away from home. 1 point all season.
So they played a B team because of the Champions League in the week,
yeah.
Did they? Who have they got?
They've got Atletico. Away.
Oh, God. Are they going to get killed, aren't they?
Well, yeah, they're so bad away from home, and they're going to one of the contenders. It'll be interesting because, you know, Atleti scored 4 at the weekend. We always think of them in the Champions League as this tight team, but Diego Simeone's side, if they go for Rostov, could beat them very, very comfortably.
The answer to the trivia teaser. Here was the question. It was someone who played in the 1995 for both teams, who featured in the 1995 Champions League final. Andy won the Champions League as a manager. Well done to Ryan Kearney and Kurt Hurd, who got the correct answer. Chris, the answer is...
Frank Rijkaard.
Excellent.
It was one of those that I got because as soon as I had the two teams of the 95 final...
Sure.
Ajax Milan, then you think, all right, then it narrows it down enough.
It does indeed, because Ruud Gullit has not won it. As a coach.
He has not. And Fanidi George also hasn't won it as a coach.
Chris, I think that's everything, is it?
I think so.
Mm.
Champions League week, Europa League week.
Then international break.
Yes.
A little bit of time off.
No, then the weekend, then the international break.
Yeah.
Who are England playing? Scotland. Ooh.
Tasty. Scott Brown might come out of international retirement or something to play.
It's a sort of character
kick
that would.
Dele Alli into the sky.
That's true, yeah. Literally over the Wembley Arch. But the problem will be Alli will be far too good for him and he'll be nowhere near.
Exactly. Tweet us at FIE Podcast. Tweet everyone you know if you enjoy the show and please leave a review on iTunes. And we'll be back next time, next Monday.
Next Monday. For more, head to the website footballineurope.co.uk.